Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It's Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Thursday, April 16th. There seems to be a growing political divide, at least in words, we'll see how much in deeds, over how much longer state and federal government should order businesses to stay closed or individuals to stay at home. New Jersey's Governor Murphy got grilled on this on Fox News last night. In Michigan, thousands of protesters showed up outside the state capitol yesterday, some on foot and some in cars, to rally against Governor Gretchen Whitmer's stay-at-home orders in that state. There was another rally like that in Ohio. The Pennsylvania State Senate yesterday sent a bill to Governor Tom Wolf that would partially lift the lockdown on most of that state's businesses and require the governor to follow any new guidelines that come from the president. In New York, Governor Andrew Cuomo has hired the consulting firm McKinsey to develop a science-based plan for the Northeast, what Cuomo calls a Trump-proof plan for safe economic reopening. Today, the president says he plans to announce... Today, President Trump says he plans to announce some relaxed social distancing policies in some states in conjunction with their governors. He says suffering and even death from economic pain could become worse than that from the virus. He is also accusing New York of crying wolf by exaggerating the need for ventilators and extra hospital beds because Governor Cuomo asked for 30,000 ventilators, has about 10,000, and is already sharing ventilators with other states in shorter supply. And the hospital beds at the Javits Center and the U.S. Navy ship the Comfort are being underutilized. In Congress, Republicans want to pass more money just for the small businesses to expand the Paycheck Protection Program that allows them not to lay off as many people. Democrats want the bill to include aid to state and local governments whose tax revenues and therefore their ability to provide vital services are getting socked. And a few House Democrats have introduced a bill to send $2,000 a month to non-wealthy Americans until the crisis is over, not just the one-time $1,200 payments now going out. Some religious groups are arguing that governments can tell businesses to stay closed for public safety, yes, but not houses of worship under the First Amendment, even though congregating in groups is seen as the specific risk. So political and cultural differences are emerging as all levels of government face tough choices ahead. With me now is New York Congressman Max Rose, who was the lead voice in Congress for the hospital ship Comfort to be deployed to New York. His Staten Island and South Brooklyn district voted mostly for Trump in 2016, but elected Rose as their Democratic congressman in 2018. And this U.S. Army veteran who was awarded a Bronze Star and a Purple Heart after being injured in Afghanistan and who sits on the Veterans Affairs and Anti-Terrorism Committees has just finished a two-week deployment with the Army National Guard to aid in the fight against the virus with his body on the line. Congressman, we always appreciate when you come on. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope you're staying strong, you and your whole family.
Thank you very much. We are, and I hope same for you. Can you tell everyone about your National Guard service? Why did you volunteer, and how were you deployed?
No, absolutely. So I was blessed to have this opportunity to get out there and help to support this effort. Any service that I did over these past 2 weeks pales in comparison to the service of our frontline medical professionals and our soldiers as well. And, you know, just some of the stories, what I saw out there is truly awe-inspiring. You know, doctors whose own family members were sick in the hospital, whose own family members had passed away, who were still doing 18 hours a day of service. nurses who hadn't even seen their family members for months because they were self-quarantining to keep their own family members safe. This is, in so many ways, a deployment for them, and they're risking their lives each and every day. So what our mission was, to use kind of combat parlance here, was to stand up a COVID-only hospital facility, converting the Seaview Psychiatric Center, which had not yet opened, into a facility that could treat pre-ICU and post-ICU COVID patients. You know, what we have made the mistake of doing initially is talking about this problem just in the sense of hospital beds, as if all hospital beds are treated alike. It's not true. What this is, in many ways, is an effort where we have to expand hospitals, pre-existing hospitals, as well as building ancillary hospitals, and integrating everything that goes into a hospital, which is as complicated as it gets. It's not just the equipment, the beds that can incline, the oxygen concentrators, the IV poles, but it's bringing in the executive medical staff, integrating their credentialing systems, their policies and procedures, their IT technology. And in the span of 6 days, the SIUH, Staten Island University Hospital, a part of the Northwell family, brought over their executive team under the leadership of Dr. Ardalek, the CEO, with the support of the 69th Infantry Regiment, the unit, the oldest Army unit in the country, New York City's pride and joy, a unit that I had served with previous to becoming a member of Congress, providing logistical support. In 6 days, we stood up this hospital facility and accepted our first patient. An incredible feat that represents this whole of government, this whole of society approach that is the only way that we'll tackle this problem.
I see the College of Staten Island in your district has canceled plans to build a field hospital on campus, apparently because the need for more beds has subsided, at least for now. And you are the lead voice in Congress for bringing the Navy ship Comfort to New York, and now the president is saying New York exaggerated the projections because the beds on the ship aren't very full. I see that the vice president announced yesterday that 258 medical military personnel were moved from the Comfort and the Javits Center to regular hospitals. So what do you see going on there and why?
Yeah. So let's take a step back here. First of all, when the initial projections were being made, this was not politics. These were legitimate, non-political projections, but the projections were not inevitable. What we did is we stepped in with a massive change in social behavior, which government alone could have never accomplished. It was all of us banding together. We changed those projections, but in war, and this is war, you plan for the worst and you hope for the best. So I don't think it is a sign of failure that New York City has excess capacity right now. In fact, that is a sign of success, and it would be a failure, though. It would be for us to quickly disband this infrastructure, because in order for us to even start to think about opening the government, the economy back up, we have to make sure that we have an infrastructure in place to handle a second surge, if that second surge comes, although we have to do everything in our power to prevent that from happening. Second thing that we have learned over the course of this process is that the non-COVID patients have largely disappeared. But that does not mean that they have disappeared forever. There are people right now in New York City who are nursing ailments, staying away from the hospital, but they can't disregard their medical situation forever. So we have got to start to plan to open up our hospital systems for elective surgeries. And these are, it's only elective surgery when it's not you. We're looking at biopsies as elective surgeries. It's also a critical aspect of opening our economy back up. Hundreds of millions of dollars every month in New York City centers around our non-COVID hospital treatment. But in order for us to do that, we have got to have places where we continue to treat COVID patients. Javits is a great example of that. This entity that we just stood up on Staten Island at the Seaview Center, a great example of that. So I am very confident in the direction that New York City is going in right now. But what's also critical is the federal government can push us resources, but we have to make sure that the mayor is adequately and equitably distributing those resources. While I was deployed or activated Staten Island's borough president, Jimmy Otto, did an unbelievable job, heroic job, advocating for Staten Island to get its fair share of this medical staff that has been allocated to it by the federal government. We still, to this day, have not gotten one person. That's just not right. So it is imperative that the mayor equitably distributes these resources as well, PPE, as well as medical staff.
On ventilators, let me play a clip of the president from a few days ago. He had the same message all week about Governor Cuomo pleading with him a few weeks ago for the feds to supply tens of thousands of ventilators. And now he says, listen.
We have hundreds of statements, including from Democrats and Democrat governors. And if you look, they were all saying, we need ventilators. We need, you don't hear ventilators anymore. They have all the ventilators they need, which we were right about. We said, you're asking for too many. You don't need that. And in all fairness, these two people right here, Dr. Birx, Dr. Fauci, they said, I don't think they need that many ventilators. I said, I agree. At one point, and I'm not knocking New York for this, but they were asking, you remember, 40,000 ventilators. And that's more than they have all over the country. And we got them a lot of ventilators, and nobody's complained.
So how do you think the public should view New York's original ask versus the need on ventilators?
So I go back to my previous statement that New York's ask was in line with projections. Now, due to changes, significant changes in social behavior, we were able to change those projections. What is critical about this, because you think about the resources necessary to fight a surge of COVID patients, and I'm thinking about this as someone who comes with healthcare experience as well as military experience, we have to, and this is the federal government is the only one that can do this. We have to be versatile and flexible in terms of our allocation of critical resources. And those resources are as follows. PPE, hospital-like systems, hospital-like beds. That means all the equipment that comes with a hospital system, as well as the staff that comes with a hospital system, as well as ventilators and other kind of ancillary critical resources. Now, we have got to develop a system at the national level where we can allocate those resources based off current data and then reallocate them as that data changes. But in order to do that, we can't play politics, and we also can't look in the rearview mirror and criticize people if they loudly advocated for resources and then the facts on the ground changes. Just in the same manner, when you allocate military resources in a conflict and then the enemy changes its actions, you don't look in the rearview mirror and criticize people. I say this as a Democrat. Nothing would make me happier, nothing, than to see this president stand up, assert his full authority as the commander-in-chief, and utilize every resource available to him to win this war. And if that means that he wins the election, so be it. But that also means that the theatrics, the unnecessary political critiques, we have to put that aside. If Democrats are doing that, and when Democrats do that, I would say the exact same thing. COVID doesn't see political affiliation. It doesn't see race. It doesn't see creed. It doesn't see socioeconomic status. And in terms of our efforts to fight this, we've got to act the same way.
So when President Trump says suffering and even death from economic pain could become worse than that from the virus, so there needs to be a better balance, or when we hear at that protest against the mandatory social distancing policy in Michigan yesterday, an organizer say, quarantine is when you restrict movement of sick people. Tyranny is when you restrict the movement of healthy people. What do you say to any of that?
Sure. So let's take a step back and talk about what is necessary to open the economy up and what does that opening actually look like? People have been saying, science-based approach, not a political approach, but that's not exactly the way to, we have to actually open the lid, kick the tires of what we mean by science-based. And what is that? How do you actually operationalize that? And I think that you have to divide it really into four separate groups. The first is that we have to have a vibrant infrastructure in place for testing people, not just for the virus, but also for the antibodies. testing people who are asymptomatic and symptomatic. I think across the country there needs to be a plan, and we are woefully inadequate in this regard, to test up to 10 million people a day. Now, the second thing is that we have to have a widespread distribution of PPE and masks, because everybody's going to have to go out with these masks if we want to get people out again participating in the economy, as well as if we want to adequately protect the people who make this city run. How do you get them? How do you have such a wide distribution of masks and PPE? Only the federal government can do that. We have to put behind us these days of cities and states competing against each other. The federal government has to step in, exert all of its purchasing authority, as well as exert all of its Defense Production Act authorities. This is total war. We should be doing the same things that we did years ago, decades ago. We can build factories. We can mandate that companies sell to the American consumer. We can put people to work. We can utilize loans to these companies so that we make sure supply is meeting demand and price gouging does not happen in the process. Third thing is that we have to, as a society, embrace the fact that social behavior will have to change until a vaccine comes out. You know, the days of mass congregating of people will likely not be able to be revived until a vaccine comes in. And we have to accept the fact that true normalcy, pre-COVID normalcy, will not be able to be achieved unless a vaccine, until we get a vaccine, and that vaccine is widely manufactured and disseminated.
What do you think that last point? Oh, go ahead. You want to make a final point on that list? Go ahead.
Lastly, is that we have to have the infrastructure in place, hospital-wise, for a second surge, the one that we have to plan for, that we hope never comes. But we can't be caught flat-footed. We have to have the beds in place that are fully equipped, the expanded hospital systems, the staff at the ready, who's protected by PPE, to protect ourselves, to make sure that our hospitals are not overrun in the event of a second surge. When those things are in place, we can start to gradually open this economy up.
Let's take a call from your district. Myrna in Bay Ridge. You're on WNYC with Congressman Max Rose. Hi, Myrna.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you for taking my call. Good morning, Congressman Rose. I have two questions.
Good morning,
questions
ma'am. Call me Max, please.
Okay. Well, I'm a constituent of yours in Bay Ridge, and I did vote for you, and I'm very satisfied with the job that you're doing. But I have two questions. First question is there any way that Congress can pressure the president to implement the Defense Protection Act to have kits, test kits, created by our industries here? Can we produce them here in greater numbers? And my second question is, why is the National Guard not being used to pick up the produce that farmers out west, are plowing under because they cannot get any distribution to food centers? Why can't the National Guard pick up that produce and bring them to the food centers to distribute?
Okay, Congressman and National Guard member Rose, what do you say to
sure.
constituent Myrna?
So, Myrna, thank you for everything you're doing, and of course, thank you for your support. Let's deal with the first thing along the Defense Production Act and test kits specifically. There are bills out there right now, which I fully support, that would not only authorize the president to utilize the powers allotted to him under this act, but would actually mandate that he does so. And I do support any effort for the president to utilize his full power as a commander-in-chief as we engage in what I believe is in essence total war against this disease and our efforts to stand the economy back up. And again, you cannot stand the economy back up unless you deal with this healthcare crisis. This is not an economic crisis that was precipitated by some, dysfunction in our economy, some structural deficit in our economy. It's not analogous to the 08 financial crisis in that regard. This is a healthcare crisis that then catalyzed an economic crisis. And if you don't deal with the healthcare aspect of it, you'll never deal with the economic aspect of it.
The president says he has used the Defense Production Act as needed. Where would you ask him to stand it up further, specifically?
It's not nearly enough. I think that put yourself in the shoes of a manufacturer of masks. Put yourself in the shoes of the CEO of 3M, for instance. They are seeing a significant rise in demand, an exponential rise in demand. But on the same hand, they do not know when that demand will decline. So they can't plan out 5 years. So they're saying, oh, maybe I won't build another factory or two factories or 10 factories. I think that the federal government could front the money for those factories to be built here in the United States, employing Americans. There could definitely be an effort to make sure that the American market is prioritized. There also is an element, and this is related, but related in part to the Defense Production Act, of using the federal government's purchasing authority to say, cities, states, stop competing against one another. The prices are just skyrocketing. Now the federal government will be the purchasing authority, and it will disseminate or distribute PPE according to need as well. Need not just based off the current crisis, but need based off a desire to prepare oneself for a future crisis. But let's talk about testing as well, because this stuff goes in full circle. We're talking about testing at first, and then we start to focus more on PPE and equipment and staffing. Now the focus is going to go right back to testing, because unless testing is dramatically increased, you can't stand the economy back up. Testing is partly test kits, but test kits is just the beginning. Test kits are the swabs, right? Mm-hmm. They're relatively inexpensive. What really matters is the lab equipment and the reagents behind the test kit. We have to make sure that there's enough lab equipment, automated processing, available in this country to process millions of tests every single day, and we have to make sure there's enough reagents. That follows the same exact calculus as the PPE discussion, with the president stepping in and utilizing his full authority to dramatically scale up production.
So
obviously you can't get jobs right now.
Obviously, you disagree with the president when he says that tests are up to the states. Congressman Max Rose, Democrat from Staten Island in South Brooklyn, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it so much. I know there is so much going on.
Well, thank you so much again for having me.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is obviously also a daily coronavirus podcast under the circumstances in our country right now. We'll keep staying on top of things to serve you the best we can. And remember, this podcast is excerpted from my live weekday call-in show, The Brian Lehrer Show. If you want to be a caller or just hear it live, it's from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time on WNYC Radio in New York, or online at WNYC.org. You can also tweet a question at us anytime. Just tweet at Brian Lehrer. Thanks for listening today.